Hey, it's number one dad mug. How about that?
Check this out, my friend.
Yeah, girl dad. Oh, okay. That's going to take us right into this. Because, you know, a little part of you probably would have liked a son. I think every father would say, yeah, it would have been nice to have a son. But you know what? It's not like I would trade one of my girls for a son. I have a daughter, so I know what it's like. But let me tell you what you're missing by not having a son. Okay. What I'm dealing with right now. I'm dealing with a 10-year-old who, this is what it sounds like, because we're a spring break right now. This is what it sounds like in my home. I'm going to push the microphone away, and this is what it generally sounds like in my home at about from, let's see, if we don't have baseball, I'll say 6 to 8 o'clock every night. Okay, ready for it?
I'm ready.
Bro, Jake, I'm over here. Bro, fire. Don't kill me, bro. Bro, what are you doing? Get the gun. It's over there. No, shoot that. Bro, what are you doing? Bro. That's my life during spring break and 2 hours during the week because he and his buddies play Fortnite. Do you know what Fortnite is?
Oh, yeah, I know. I know what Fortnite is. Yep.
Oh, my God. If I hear another bro coming from my basement, I'm going to murder one of these kids. That's all it is.
We've been getting bra lately. From the 9-year-old. Like, mm-hmm. Come on. She said, I'm going to call you either dad or bra. I was like, what? What are we talking about here?
You're going to call me Mr. Canzano. That's what you're going to call me, damn it.
Yeah.
They're unbelievable.
I like to say that I specialize, though. I have 3 daughters. You know, I have it down. You know, you can take up pickleball. You can play basketball and play club year round. You can play 190 baseball games if you want in the summer and the spring. I specialize in daughters. If you have any questions about raising girls, I have some of them.
And your oldest is what?
21. She's at Oregon State. She is your student body vice president over there at Oregon State. So
let's go. And then give me the other ages.
7 and 9, which means 7 and 9.
Okay, so they're years away from the teenage years.
Yeah.
I'm in the middle of it right now, 14, going on 15 here soon.
Yeah.
Which is just, you know, a whole nother can of worms.
I like to think I know I'm a better dad with the 7-year-old and the 9-year-old, just because like if you had a chance to do something and, you know, and then repeat it years later, you'd be better at it. And so I often apologize to my 21-year-old via text and I'll say, I'm so sorry.
Well, because you're younger too, so you didn't know what you were doing. You're young and dumb.
Yeah.
What would you have changed?
I just think I traveled a lot with work and I poured myself into it. And like a lot of, I think guys in general go through this in their 40s and 50s. You kind of start looking around going, hey, did I invest my time in the places that I should have invested it? You know, should I have, should I have covered a NBA Finals, a World Series, a Final Four, an Olympics, a Kentucky Derby, a BCS championship game? Or maybe, you know, what did I miss at home? And so I look back at that. And as much as you want to say, oh, I was there for your games or, you know, it's that night. It's that 6 to 8 p.m. that you're talking about that you miss out on. You miss out on Fortnite. You miss out on all that stuff.
Well, no, I'm going to tell you right now, if I could leave, I'd like to miss out on Fortnite. I'd like to never hear that bleeping, bruh, why are you shooting me? Fortnite every single night. Now, Liz, I played video games when I was a kid, so I mean, I get it. But we never played this stuff. We played Tecmo Bowl and Super Tecmo. Hey, I mean, that's all we played. And Baseball Stars.
4 plays on Tecmo Bowl, and that was plenty. Okay.
Yeah.
I can't even catch the ball playing Madden or whatever kids are playing.
Have you tried to play this stuff?
Yes.
Like these new video games? It's unbelievable how complicated it is. Yes. I mean, I think you have to have a master's degree and like there's 15,000 buttons. You know, I'm dropping back to pass. He's already sacked me. And I'm like, I haven't even drawn, I'm trying to find somebody open. I'm getting mad. Like I'm throwing my controller and it just makes me upset. I get very upset.
You look like you're playing for the Panthers. And you don't know what you're doing.
What I can't wait is, when is that college football game coming out? When are we bringing that back? Is that coming back soon? They're teasing it, right?
I've heard enough about it, you know, so it's coming back. And
you want to know why?
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you want to know why it took me 5.5 years to graduate from college? And I was a comm major, for God's sakes. And I mean, listen, I mean, that should be like 3 years. Right. Because of college football, that video game, because I played it all the time.
Yeah. It's fun. I just remember Tecmo Bowl, though, the original Tecmo Bowl. If you had Bo Jackson or you had Dan Marino or if you had the 49ers, those were fun games. And you had four plays, okay? It was not about your game plan. This was about execution back in the old days.
Do you realize, I still, to this day, I think there's only one unstoppable play in Tecmo Bowl. And that is the Dwight Clark drag over the middle.
Yeah.
That Montana would hit him every time. And it was the only play you couldn't stop that play.
I had a friend who figured out how to stop that thing. And so you had to keep him guessing. Yeah. It's about timing. And, you know, we should have a tournament. We should have a Puck Tecmo tournament.
I'm in. I'm so in. All right. John Canzano is here. Bald-faced truth, 750 the game. Of course, he writes there at johncanzano.com. You've got a lot of stuff up there that I want to cover, my friend. But I'm going to start off first with this. We are going to embarrass you.
Okay.
First place, sports calm of the year, Associated Press. Congratulations. I hope listeners and our viewers understand the royalty that we get to speak to every single week here with John Canzano. Congratulations on the award. Best column there, Associated Press. How does it feel? What was the speech?
I'll tell you this. That the APSC, the Associated Press Sports Editors, that's if you're a writer and you're writing in a sports section in this country, you know what it is. And you know that every year they recognize the best sports writing in the country. And so, you know, I've been in there before when I was working at newspapers, but it's unusual. You know, I was one of the first independent publications to be approved for membership at APSC. And so it was cool just to be included among the daily newspapers as a news entity. And then, you know, you enter four columns, your four best columns from the year, and they have a bunch of different categories and for different kinds of writing. And, you know, of course, it was kind of cool to see, you know, myself in there. And this isn't why you do it, but I had a boss back in the day, Charlie Waters, who was an old, he was a LA Times magazine, Sunday magazine editor. He told me, you know, you don't do it for the awards, but if they're handing them out, you'll take one, right? Like of course. That's the thing. So
everybody likes to be recognized for their work. Everybody likes. All right. So what did you win for? What were the four columns you submitted?
The four that I said, one was on the downfall of the Pac-12. What happened with George Kliavkov? The gun was empty as we know it. Mm-hmm. That was the quote that I had that I used in the headline for that piece. Second one was about Pat McAfee bullying Washington State and Oregon State in front of that game. I went after McAfee a little bit. Another was on Bill Shonley, the late Blazers broadcaster. Anybody who knew the Shons knows that his funeral was a spectacle. Bill Walton sat in front of me, and, you know, Shonley had, you know, I love this. He had dictated everything that would happen at his funeral, like the music, the choir playing, you know, everything that he wanted to happen. And this church that they held it in had never actually done a memorial service where they had a body in a casket. But Shonley wanted to be at his own funeral. And so he said, I want to be at my memorial service. So I wrote this column about Shons, and you know, he's such a beloved figure in the Portland area. And then my final column was, one just about fatherhood and parenting. And so, you know, I try to keep that range as, you know, we started talking about parenting. You know, I wrote about my 7-year-old daughter and teaching her how to ride a bike for the first time. And, you know, how I was sad that was going to be the last daughter that I was going to, I taught them all how to ride bikes. And that's kind of my thing in our household. Mm.
Now, do you win it for all of them, or did you win it for one in particular?
It's sort of the group of four. And so you enter your best four against everybody else's best four. And then they have panels that narrow it down to a top 10, and then they roll out the winner right around the final four. So it was cool to be recognized, but I especially it meant a lot to me because, you know, being independent, going out on your own, you know this, just to get some validation from the mainstream entities was cool. And that's I appreciate that.
That must validate your decision, what you decided to do.
It does. But I think, you know, I work for the readers, you know, and you work for listeners and viewers now. And, you know, that's gratifying to me when I'm in the gym or I'm in the grocery store and somebody comes up or at a game. I was at the Portland Regional for the women's NCAA tournament, and I had people coming up to me saying, hey, I'm a subscriber, and I can see what it means to them to be in that one-on-one relationship. And it means a lot to me too. So, you know, that stuff is far more important than the awards, but the validation. Yeah. If you're an independent agency, I heard from a bunch of other people who are independent who said that is so cool to see you up there against, you know, daily newspapers. And I'm just, you know, I'm grateful for everybody who reads me.
I'm just writing down here, make note to go to gym.
Yeah.
I don't go to the gym.
You'll find some of your viewers and your listeners in that gym.
I'm not sure. I'm not so sure. If I went to a dive bar, I think that's more our speed. All right, I want to get into the Women's National Championship TV numbers. 18.7 million, I believe. I think it peaked at 24, I think was the number. I may be incorrect on that, but 18 million was the main number. Why? Why 18 million people? Why this year did we see such a spike in viewership and people investing their time into women's basketball?
Everyone wants to make it Caitlin Clark and only Caitlin Clark, and she's a big boost. She's a big part of it. You know, this event was at 9.8 million a year ago in the same time slot, so it's a really good comparison. It just doubled up. And so you're right about 24. It peaked at 24 million, but I want to give an assist, too, to Angel Reese. If we go back to the end of last year's tournament, the rivalry between those two was fueling a lot of the discussion and just wait till next year. And so I think the momentum of women's college basketball really started last March and then just kind of led us into what we saw this year. And the tournament was more compelling. We know the names of the players. We know their games. We watched them and we talked about them, men or women. You couldn't tell if you walked in the room if they were talking about a men's Elite Eight game or a women's Elite game. If, you know, you were talking about strategy and how to break, you know, what were they doing on offense? And so I thought that was really cool. It showed a real advancement. But I think you go to Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, Kim Mulkey, give her an assist as well. I think the characters played a role in elevating it. And I just think people understood and grasped and sort of bought into what was happening. And it became a bigger deal than watching UConn win another national championship on the men's side. I got bored with that title game and, you know, on the men's side.
Yeah, it was. And I don't think as we were recording this, I don't think the numbers have been released yet. I know the Final Four was doing about, just in general, the two semifinals was doing about 12 million. There's no doubt the women are going to beat whatever the men's number is going to be. Just it is remarkable. Now, I would ask this. Is it sustainable? Like, what's the drop next season? It's not going to certainly drop below, like, what'd you say they did 9 million last year?
Yeah,
I don't think it's going to go below 9, but what type of drop? Do you think this is something here to stay for the sport?
I think it is. I think it's going to open bigger discussions, but I think we're going to see a dip. I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see that number around 10 or 12 million, very similar to what I think we're going to see in the men's side. You know, the men's game did tip off late on the East Coast. You're going to eliminate some viewers. I think, you know, it was a foregone conclusion in the second half, so you lose some audience there. But I think, you know, they'll lose 25 or 30% because there's no Caitlin Clark, there's no Angel Reese. But think about the stories that are coming back. I mean, you still have Kim Mulkey, and she's interesting. You've got Juju Watkins at USC. I think UConn probably had the best women's team, all-around team this year, but they were just hurt. And so I think they'll be back and they'll be important. And ESPN is certainly fueling the glow of UConn, you know, in their partnership with Gino Auriemma's program. I think you're going to see, you know, South Carolina reload as they always do. You're going to see LSU be better. I'm curious to see what Iowa will look like. I think there will be interest. And I think what happened, though, this year is you had a lot of people who had never been exposed to the women's game fall in love with it and say, hey, you know, there's something pure about the way they play. And, you know, it's different than the men's game and different certainly than what we saw with Purdue and a lot of isolation and dumping the ball into the post. It looked too much like an NBA game in that men's title game. But
and I think part of the attraction for people to watch Clark is the same attraction why people like Steph Curry. It's the where she shoots. It's pulling up from the logo. It's the step back threes. I mean, that's just stuff at the women's level you just don't see.
Yeah, I think we'll see more of it, too. And, you know, I think I brought this up before, but like, you know, it's like in the late 1950s, you have Roger Bannister breaking that 4-minute mile mark. And then, you know, the doctors were telling everybody you'd die if you ran under 4 minutes. Like, it's not humanly possible. And I think some of the same could be said of women's college basketball is like we didn't see men shoot from that distance until we started seeing Steph Curry and then Damian Lillard and others, mm-hmm. right? And now I think Caitlin Clark has got a bunch of young girls in gyms who are out there saying, hey, I can expand my game to 27 feet, to 29 feet. Let's see how far I can shoot from. And I, you know, started to see it bleed into other games with players being more comfortable. Maybe there's just a comfort level that players in general are having with sort of expanding the distance at which they shoot. And it's more exciting because it opens everything else up if you can make baskets from that distance.
Why do you think some of the veteran players like the Breanna Stewarts, Diana Taurasi, Sue Bird, all three of them with their little digs and shots at her? Why? Jealousy?
Yes. And I think they, down deep, I think if they're being real, I think they probably felt like they never got their due when they were mm-hmm. on that stage. I think that the brand of Iowa, LSU, South Carolina, the colleges, the brands are bigger than the WNBA teams. And so even now, even though, you know, the WNBA will draft off this, certainly, you know, the Las Vegas Aces moving their game next season against the Indiana Fever. They've moved it from Michelob Ultra Arena over to T-Mobile because they know it's going to be a sellout. You're going to see the Caitlin Clark effect at least in the early part of her rookie year, and they're all going to benefit from it. And I think there's going to be more interest in the WNBA, but I think down deep, some of those players are upset that they didn't get their due. They didn't get their day in the sun. And, you know, I even talked to a play-by-play broadcaster who is in the WNBA, Cindy Brunson, who is the Phoenix Mercury play-by-play announcer, former ESPN anchor. And she said, hey, there's 130 or 140 players in the WNBA just waiting to block Caitlin Clark's shot because they've heard about it for months and months and months. And there's an adjustment period that every player has, sure. male, female. When you're moving from college or the minor leagues to the big leagues, you're going to have an adjustment period. Sabrina Ionescu went through it. She had to learn how to shoot from a longer distance, and she expanded her three-point range, and she didn't shoot from that range when she was at Oregon. And suddenly she's in the NBA three-point contest, and she's showing new range. She's a better shooter. She had to do that. Caitlin Clark's going to have to do that as well. But I think Taurasi, Bird, I think they're speaking candidly and authentically, but I think there's some jealousy in there. It's laced with jealousy.
Yeah. Cindy Brunson, you know where she went to school?
Washington State.
That's Cook. Right. A proud yeah. graduate of the Murrow School of Communication. Let's switch gears. That was a fantastic run. I thought she was great. It was great theater. I just love watching her play basketball. And it was a fun basketball season there on the women's side. Certainly more entertaining and enjoying than the men's side. Speaking of TV deals, what's the latest with Wazoo and Oregon State? Where am I when I'm not over in Pullman and God's country? Where am I going to plant my fat ass on my couch and watch these guys?
It's not going to matter because they are, you know, Oregon State, Washington State. First of all, they were more interested in distribution and exposure than revenue. So, okay. You know, I am told that Pat Chun and Scott Barnes were leading the charge on this TV negotiation. So you have the two ADs at the respective schools. Now, for people who say Pat Chun leaving Washington State, oh, it's not going to hurt them. I definitely think it put a pause, at least, on the late stages of this negotiation. They have 13 home football games. I am told that Oregon State and Washington State are bundling them together. At least the vast majority of those games will be bundled as a package and offered to one provider. Now, they're not going to go a la carte like a lot of people thought early on. You know, who would want to take all of those games? They'll probably have to go a la carte. I'm told that's not the plan. And they're moving. And I was, you know, right before Chun took the Washington job, I was told they were very close to completing and announcing a deal with CW. The CW had the ACC football games and basketball games. You can get it over the air. It's available in 100% of households. You can find it. It's wide distribution. You don't have to kick off worried about where Fox is putting their games, or, you know, you can kick off at reasonable times. I think Kirk Schultz, the president at Washington State, had talked about kickoff times mattering. So it checked a number of boxes, or it does check a number of boxes for Oregon State and Washington State. Deal's not finalized, but they're getting there, and I'm told it'll be announced soon. But I expect to see them on the CW. There's a chance that one or two games could end up on Fox. There's still a chance out there. Now, when they play road games against their Mountain West opponents, they're going to be on CBS. They're going to be on Fox. You know, Fox may be interested in the Civil War, Oregon State and Oregon playing that game in Corvallis. But it looks to me like, you know, the money wasn't the primary factor, or is not the primary factor for Oregon State and Washington State. It is exposure, being available. You know, I was asking a bunch of sources questions and trying to figure out, are they going with Apple or what are they going to do here? And they said, did you cut the cord? That was one of the questions. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, you don't necessarily need to be a cord cutter to find the Oregon State and Washington State home football games next year. So I think they're going to be on the CW.
Well, now I got to find out on Fubo, do I have the CW network? And then, of course, on the CW network, I mean, I love myself some All-American. It's a great show, yes. Great TV show.
Love that.
The all right, so when they say the package deal, TV times, will they pick their TV times? I mean, will we get to like a, if they're at home, like a traditional 12:30 start?
You could see, I think you're going to see 12:30s and 2s and 3s. Okay. I don't think you're going to see 7:30s and, you know, 7 o'clocks on those games. I think, you know, smart. Oregon State and Washington State, their concern is what? Exposure. They don't want to disappear. And the second thing is for, you know, their season ticket base and their renewals. I think they want to be able to sell to fans that, hey, this is going to be family kickoff times and you're going to be able to bring your kids to the stadium and you're not going to have to be driving home at 1 o'clock in the morning if you're driving a distance. And those things mattered more than the money, and probably because they won the settlement, right? If they don't get the settlement money, I think they would totally be focused on piece these out, go a la carte, get the maximum dollars. But that's not what they're doing. And so I'm told they're putting the final touches on this thing. And I expect that by the end of the month, we'll get an announcement. I think the CW is a good choice. Saw what they did with the ACC games. Another caveat, Puck, the Pac-12 network will be the production entity. The CW does not have in-house production. So now you have you create some business for your production facility.
So do we have then those folks that will like, do we have the same like broadcasters, the same like announcers, the Ashley Amundson and Yogi Roth? Do we know if those will be kept aboard?
I don't know yet.
Imagine so.
I don't know. And I don't know how, you know, it's 13 games. Could they just hire them on a, hey, you're going to just do 13 games. You won't be busy, you know, throughout the rest of the season. I'm sure those folks are trying to line up other work as well. But, you know, Teresa Gold, the Pac-12 commissioner, probably knows that answer. I don't have it right now, but at least the facility and the production team will be producing those games. And it opens up some other things because the CW had NASCAR. CW had the ACC. CW also had Live Golf. Mm-hmm. And because they don't have in-house production, they've leaned on outside production facilities. So keep an eye on this because remember that Pac-12 network facility, they're going to keep it open. It's a side hustle for Oregon State and Washington State. And there's a potential here that they become the production entity for the CW's other sports offerings. So keep an eye on that.
That's fascinating. The CW, is there a streaming element to it? Like, can you stream it?
I don't know. I have no idea. But I just know that when the local folks who, like, because your local channel, I think if it's Fox or CBS, I can't remember who the partner of CW is, but you know, they'll have the ability to carry those games on your local affiliate. And so they can, you know, I heard from one of the TV stations who said, gosh, do you know the kickoff times? Because they were awfully interested in, could they carry Washington State or Oregon State's football game and lead it right into their Saturday evening newscast, right? And mm-hmm. so I think there's a lot of curiosity and a lot of opportunities and tentacles to this thing. But exposure was the biggest thing. And the CW is available in 99.5% of American households. So it won't just be on the West Coast. You'll be able to see Oregon State, Washington State nationally.
Let's switch gears. That Athletic article that came out about a week ago, the College Sports Tomorrow League, the Super League, you wrote about it up at johncanzano.com, and you brought up the same concerns that I think most people are going to bring up, and that's the SEC and the Big Ten. This thing won't fly unless those two are on board. Do you think that they would be on board with the Super League? And for those who haven't seen the story, it basically is going to create a 7-10 team league with an eighth, which you could be like kind of relegation with the other teams. Oregon State, Washington State would be a part of the 70. Basically just seems like it would be the old Pac-10 is kind of what it sounds like. Do you think this has legs, or do you think the Big Ten and the SEC step in and say, no, we're not going to do anything like this?
Nothing's happening without the Big Ten and SEC. I'm going to say that up front. Like, you have to have them involved, and there's no incentive for them to be involved right now. And I think, you know, we look at the timing of college sports tomorrow and the college football playoff announcement of their new TV deal. I don't think it's coincidence that they fast-tracked the TV deal for the college football playoff and had that done. They were targeting March 15th of having that done, and here came college sports tomorrow, because I don't think the SEC and Big Ten wanted too much discussion to get too serious on that front. Certainly their TV partners didn't. They want to own it all, and they know they can get it through the SEC and the Big Ten. So I'll say that up front. But the secondary thing is, like, I think it's really important that this stuff's being talked about. And I called Kirk Schultz, the Washington State president, and said, what do you think? And he said he was still digesting it, but he said, I'm glad it's out there. And I know what he means by that, because you've got some important players. There's 20 different presidents that are involved in this. You've got an executive in the NFL that's involved in it. And they're talking about this and trying to take the idea that Chip Kelly sort of floated. Let's separate football from everything else. Let's have it play on its own tier. I love the relegation part of this. And I think you have to begin conversations about this stuff, you know, in some cases, a couple of years or a few years in front of when it actually happens. But you're going to need a earthquake in the ecosystem to force the Big Ten and the SEC to come to the table. Now, that earthquake could be House versus the NCAA or any other, you know, there's a bunch of lawsuits out there that are targeting conferences. And so, you know, they have the potential that one or more of these lawsuits threatens to bankrupt these conferences. If you get to that point, maybe it is in their best interest to split away, do away with the NCAA. It cannot exist as an entity. We've heard a number of presidents say this is no longer sustainable. You can't do this. This is a short-term thing. And at the very least, 2033, 2030, 2031, you start to see these TV deals expire for these other conferences. If that happens, this college sports tomorrow thing needs to be in position at that point to say, hey, we're bringing it back together. We're putting the band back together. I think it's a great idea. It's very inclusive. The Big Ten and SEC hate it. I think 70 or 80 teams might be too many. Bob Thompson, the former Fox Sports president, said he thinks 48 is the right number. He says you start to get matchups that are not attractive to TV. And I go, gosh, like, you know, we have that already. Like, we have a, you know, a lot of games that are not attractive to TV. But I like that they're talking about it, Puck. And I think if you're an Oregon State or Washington State fan, you have to love it because it gets you back into the room. And then, you know, maybe you're rooting for the ACC to implode and you're rooting for some of these lawsuits to come through, because it looks like, you know, the conferences and not the new world Pac-12, the old Pac-12, the old Big Ten, SEC, ACC, Big 12, they're on the hook with these class action suits. And if they get sued into submission, they may have to do something else.
Yeah, it'd be great. It'd be great. I'd love to see it. I mean, from a Washington State perspective, I want to see it. And even from Oregon State, I just want to see the rivalries come back and just the natural geographical, you know, games be back on board. And if it would mean like you'd get the old Pac-10 back, that'd be sensational. Transfer rule. It looks like it's going to pass and they're going to modify the transfer rule. And I just want to know what they're thinking. What do they think this is going to make the game better? Because now they're going to allow you to transfer as many times as you want. You don't have to sit out. You can play immediately. You can't transfer like mid-year, but there will be no penalties. There'll be no anything about how many times you can transfer. No stopgap on it all. You can transfer as many times as you want. Why this conclusion, and how is this going to be better for college football or college athletics? It's just going to make it worse. It's going to be free agency every single year.
Yeah, it gets worse before it gets better, right? You know, the motivating factor was a lawsuit and the fear that the Department of Justice even got involved and said that this is a potential antitrust violation. And so, you know, you talk about the breakup of the NCAA. You know, if you're rooting for the college sports tomorrow or tremendous chaos, you're rooting for all this stuff to have some success. And so the NCAA is backing off their transfer limitation, and they're saying you can transfer multiple times. You just can't play at two different schools within the same year, the sports year. So you couldn't move from Kentucky in week 2 and go play at Duke in week 4. of the college football season or whatever, but you end up with chaos and free agency, and it's all moving towards athletes getting paid, collective bargaining, unions. It's moving in that direction. And so I think it's going to be a real test to see how much patience sports fans have, because I got to admit, I'm even getting exhausted with this. There are, you know, Oregon State's women's basketball team goes to the Elite Eight. The morning after they get eliminated from the tournament, they've got players telling the head coach, hey, we're going to get in the portal. They should be enjoying that. They should be taking a victory lap. They should be able to recruit off of that success. Nobody can do it. There were 1,100 women's Division I women's basketball players in the portal this week. 1,100. There's no room for all of them to go anywhere. And when you start thinking about that, you think about this is not sustainable. I think the NCAA is just trying to buy some time. They were scared that the Department of Justice was going to say, hey, you're in violation of antitrust laws.
I don't know if you just heard it. It probably didn't make it over the microphone, but I could hear the 11-year-old or the 10-year-old screaming downstairs about Fortnite again.
Bro,
why are you shooting me again? Oh, my God. It's just unbelievable. Quickly, I have taken up so much of your time, as I know we always go long on this. You caught up with the fan in Portland,
yeah,
who spotted the 3-point line being wrong. How did you track him down?
I just started asking people. Because you mentioned it to me. It's your fault. You mentioned to me, have you found the fan yet? And I said, you know, I haven't. And so I started asking people who were at the event. I know a lot of the people. The event was in Portland, so I know a lot of the people were at the arena. And I said, you know, the NCAA closed ranks, shut everything down. I said, how did you find out? And they said it was a fan in the 300 section. It's an attorney who was sitting up in the 300 section. He's a family law attorney. Rode his bicycle to the arena. He gets to the arena. It's Easter Sunday. He takes his seat in the 300 level. He looks down at the court and he goes, huh, like, I can't be the only one who's noticed this, but the 3-point lines are not equal. And then he started talking about it. And the guy in front of him happened to know one of the ushers and texted down to the usher and said, hey, you know, we just took a picture up here. The 3-point lines are off. They got the attention of one of the NCAA people who were sitting, you know, courtside. There's about 10 or 12 minutes before the game starting. Oh. And they were watching from the 300 level puck. And they said when the person brought out the tape measure, they started laughing. They were like, oh, my gosh, we're going to cause a delay in the game here. And people who were watching at home, the telecast of the game, they were talking about there is a delay in Portland. And the attorney was on the phone with his wife and he says, turn on the TV. And she says, there's a delay. And he says, I think it might be my fault. And so, you know, the coaches, to their credit, didn't make too big a deal about it, but it was an embarrassing moment for the NCAA. And I think somebody at that factory in Michigan probably got fired.
So good. Go read it up at johncanzano.com. Okay, lastly, you know, we've talked about this before, but the growing frustration that Blazer fans have, obviously, with the current ownership group. For people who don't know, it's Jody Allen and her group, same group that owns the Seahawks up here in Seattle. This is a great, I saw this on your Twitter feed up at John Canzano BFT. So Fan Appreciation Day is coming up here in a few days, April 12th.
Friday.
Okay. Against Houston. Tickets for this on StubHub are $3. That's it. Now, the best thing about this is the first 10,000 people that come into, what do we call it? The Moda Center still?
Moda Center. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Jody Allen is worth billions of dollars. Billions. What are the first 10,000 people getting as they walk into the Moda Center on Fan Appreciation Day?
Well, Puck, there for the $3 price of admission, you are going to get a basketball game and you're going to get a stick of lip balm. Now,
lip balm. That's how she's saying. Thank you for supporting us and our $1 billion industry.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, the Blazers reached out and told me that, you know, Ticketmaster is providing the lip balm. And I think that makes it worse. I actually think it does, because I think you want, like, I've been to a lot of stadiums on Fan Appreciation Day, and I've seen them give away bicycles. A lot of teams will give away you know, a bunch of autographed 8x10 photos. They'll have players sign equipment, bats, balls, whatever sport. You know, the Dodgers gave away a Prius 1 year on Fan Appreciation Day. Blazers are giving lip balm to the lucky 10,000 who show up early.
But they're not actually giving it away. No. It's Ticketmaster?
Ticketmaster.
So she and her ownership group aren't doing anything.
They say they're going to give coupons for the team store and for the concession stand. And so you get 20 to 30% off. And
how frustrated are people down there with them?
Oh, beyond. It's gone beyond frustration because, see, the dirty secret is, you know, we always say that, you know, the market won't lie. You know, if you have a bad restaurant, people won't show up. If you have a bad product, they won't buy it. The truth is people in Portland are underserved as a sports market. It's the largest sports market with only one professional team in the country. And so you have a lot of Blazer fans who will renew their season tickets regardless of how bad the team is or how bad the roster is or how much apathy there is or how much lip balm they're getting. They'll just renew. And so, you know, there's a lot of frustration with that because the fans feel like they are taken for granted and they feel like this is a dead end. And there's just, you know, every week I do a Monday mailbag and I get questions about, can Adam Silver force her to sell it? Well, she's not really the owner. She's a trustee. So there's a problem there. This isn't a Donald Sterling situation where, you know, she's done some things that, you know, are shaky and questionable. And there's been lawsuits and, you know, people have, you know, the USDA made her destroy her bodyguards, destroy a bunch of giraffe bones. And, you know, there was a sex harassment thing that was a cloud over her, but it doesn't rise to Donald Sterling. And then going beyond that, there's no, you know, there's nothing in the Board of Governors that says that the league can force a trustee to sell a team. So there's a problem there for Adam Silver. Now, publicly, he's saying, you know, Jody's just done a great job, great ambassador. We're excited to see what this franchise can be, whatever the commissioner says. But privately, he has to be itching to get this thing in the hands of Phil Knight. Like, you know, Phil Knight and Adam Silver have known each other for years. To have the Nike, you know, influence in that room with the Board of Governors would be huge for the league. Phil wants the team, but as one league executive told me, there's nothing that a billionaire loves more than telling another billionaire to pound sand. And that's what Jody Allen has told Phil Knight to this point. And she sent out that statement after he said he wanted to buy the team. She said it could take 10 to 20 years. He doesn't have 10 to 20 years. We all know that. And so it was basically just a big middle finger from Jody saying, you know, stay in your lane.
All right. What are we cooking up at johncanzano.com? What can we alert readers and listeners and fans of your terrific writing to?
Well, I encourage you to check out the Monday mailbag that published this week. It's a fantastic dive in a variety of other areas. I get a bunch of questions, but I've got a big heartwarming story coming up later this week. And I'm really focused on what Oregon State and Washington State are doing strategically from a marketing standpoint. They must capture, there's more people interested in Oregon State, Washington State right now than ever in history. They have to capture that. And it can't just be the folksy good old little engine that could and look at us. It can't be that. You have to sell these programs as America's team. And maybe the CW thing helps, but I'm interested in what the league is doing and the conference is doing on the marketing front to sort of sustain that mission nationally.
There he is, John Canzano. Read all of his work at johncanzano.com. Follow him on social media, John Canzano, BFT, and 750 The Game down in Portland. John, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Cheers.
All right, and cheers to you, sir. And we will talk to you soon. And as always, we promise to be better.
No shirt, no shoes, no dice.
Would anybody like to smoke some pot?
Yeah.
I was born to lick your face. I was born to rub you. But you were born to rub me first.
What do you need my address for?
We'd like to send out a mailer.
Mother of mercy, I don't speak Japanese!